Hey, we're back here on Downtown on a Tuesday afternoon. Rich Kimble with you. Our next guest is an acclaimed actor and producer, and we can now add author to his resume as well. He's got a brand new book coming out next week called Prairie Man, My Little House Life and Beyond. We are pleased to be joined on Downtown by Dean Butler. Dean, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, Rich, thanks for having me. Thank you so much. You called a moment before at the top of your hour. I was turned in the wrong direction of my phone. So thank you for hanging with me here.
Happy to get us both turned in the right direction. I think that's good. We can all use some help with that.
For you.
Want to talk about the road that led you to Little House. You had done, am I right, you did an episode of Streets of San Francisco with Michael Douglas and Carl Malden?
Yeah, I had done, that was my first, actually the first, my first speaking situation on Streets was after Michael Douglas had left. And so it was with Richard Hatch and Carl Malden.
Oh, right, right.
Where I was a malicious phone caller. I was, you know, like a young kid who inadvertently, unknowingly was terrorizing an old man who was played wonderfully by Pat Hingle.
Wow.
Who was a wonderful, wonderful actor. And that was great fun. The cool thing about that was seeing my name on the dressing room door when the honey wagon drove up to the location. There was my name on the door. I mean, for a young actor, that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then you did a TV movie with Stephanie Zimbalist.
Yeah, that was really a significant thing. So that was a little while later, not much longer after that, maybe another year, 6 months, something like that. A wonderful casting director named Mary Goldberg came to San Francisco to cast this movie for CBS. Forever was based on the Judy Blume novel Forever, which was so controversial back in the early to mid 1970s, all about first love and those kinds. It was that kind of a story. And Stephanie had been cast as the young woman, and they were looking for the Michael Wagner role. And the director of this movie, John Cordy, was based out of the San Francisco Bay Area. And I think he was very interested in casting locally if he could. And he had no concern about casting someone who was completely unknown. He just wanted to have, I think he just wanted to have the right person opposite Stephanie. And when that worked out, that was really the one in a million shot that people hear about. I mean, this was to be cast with virtually one under five role to my credit as the male lead in a CBS movie of the week was just an awesome, awesome opportunity. And it brought me to Los Angeles and it got me my first agent in Southern California. And that all led to Little House, so many other fun things. But that Forever experience, it's a wonderful book, and it has remained controversial for a great many people. But I think it's a very intelligent look at young people considering their first intimate experience. And, you know, I think that has to be done thoughtfully, and this book was all about how that might be done thoughtfully. And so it was really cool to be a part of that.
Well, then you got the opportunity to join the cast of an already established hit. Was there some trepidation even just at the opportunity to jump into a show that was doing really well?
Well, no one wants to be the reason that something's going to come apart at the seams, you know, so there's that. I don't know. I think actors can be, you know, you can be a little self-absorbed thinking that you could wreck this thing, you know, that I could wreck it. I mean, Michael was never going to let anyone wreck it. You know, it was too good, and he was too good. And he was going to control the way this went and bring this character along slowly. And after a really wonderful introduction to start the season, the sixth season off, he, you know, the parts came gently through the season until it got much more involved towards the end of that sixth season. But being a part of Little House, Rich, has been I mean, anybody who's watched it, I mean, here we are celebrating 50 years. 50 years. I mean, it's we're not alone in that category. There are a lot of wonderful programs, not a huge number of wonderful programs in comparison to the number of shows that get produced. But Little House is one of those shows that has made it to 50 relevantly. You know, it's like we are there for people. The show is all over the world. It stays all over the world. It's just been an amazing gift.
Am I right about the advice you got before your final audition in front of Michael Landon? Were you told, whatever you do, don't act?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Michael's casting office called me and left a message and just said, you know, whatever you do, don't act. Michael wants a very naturalistic performance. And so I was, after I sort of got off the floor with anxiety, thinking, well, if I'm not acting for him, what am I doing? You know, I understand it now. I completely understand the direction now. At the time, it was a little intimidating. And what I did was just, I went in and tried to just, which is really what you want to do, I just tried to have a very natural conversation, a real conversation with the casting director who I was reading with as Michael was watching. And it was really a template for how the work on the show, where the way he wanted the work done. He wanted it very, very simple. I mean, Little House was so homespun and so just very basic in its truth and in its heartfelt approach to storytelling that you didn't need to utz anything. You know, you just just be there and be present. And if you were the right person, it would work. And I mean, that's really the task. They talk about it. So much is said in the casting process that, you know, 90% of the success of someone's or a director's success is in the casting. If you can get the right people in the parts, that's most of the work. Not to say that people don't need to be directed. I did need to be directed. But if you're the right person, the direction is going to be accessible, and you're going to be able to act on that direction in a way that's going to make what you're being asked to do effective. And I think Michael was so confident in what he was doing. You know, he had all the control. He had total belief in what he was doing with the show, and he put everybody who was there. You know, and he made those decisions. NBC certainly had something to say about it in the casting of the original characters, but once the show was running, Michael made all those decisions. I mean, NBC's casting office didn't really have a lot to do with the show, and so they could concentrate on other things. Michael made the decisions, and the people he wanted are the people who were there. And so that was a nice thing, to have that validation. It didn't make it easy all the time, but, you know, you think, well, it's nice to know that the person who you're working with wants you there.
We're talking with Dean Butler on Downtown. His new book is called Prairie Man. Of course, first rule of acting is if the director asks you if you can do something, you know, like ride a horse. Yes, I can. Of course I can, even if you haven't. Yeah. But that was not new to you. You'd grown up on a ranch.
Yeah, I grew up on a ranch in Northern California, and this was a summertime ranch for our family. It had been founded by my great-great-grandfather in 1885. It's still there. When I was growing up there, there was no running hot water. There was no electricity. We read by coal oil lanterns at night. It was very much a Little House experience. During the days, we swam in a pool that had been carved out of the ground with horses and plows, and we rode all over the hills overlooking San Francisco Bay. And it was a beautiful, beautiful way to grow up in this large multi-generational family where we really bonded with each other. And it was a very Little House kind of experience. And I didn't really know when I went in the door, Rich, and I don't think young actors recognize this, or they don't think about it particularly. We walk in the door, actors walk in the door to audition with their whole life on their back. You know, it's all right there. The specifics may not be instantly apparent or knowable, but there is an overall tone that everybody brings in the door with them, and it's either right or it's not right. And casting decisions are made in about 8 seconds. They decide, and when I say that, it sounds like maybe I'm being facetious, but really, casting decisions are made in about 8 seconds, in the sense that in 8 seconds, a casting director or a director or a producer knows if an actor could be right for a part, and they also have a sense very quickly if you're not going to be right for a part. And there's very little you're going to do to change that point of view. I grew up around actors, a lot of young actors who felt that they could just stay in the room long enough, they could change the producer or director, casting director's mind. I mean, it really doesn't work that way. You're not going to change somebody's mind. As humans, we see somebody, we make big decisions about everybody we meet, and it's very hard to move us off those opinions once we form them, and we form them very quickly. So I think I walked in the door at MGM back in the spring of 1979, carrying my whole life right on in the clothes I was wearing and my attitude and all of that. And I think I feel very fortunate that Susan saw what it was that I was, and Michael saw it too, and invited me to become a part of something that's really stood the test of time and is very special.
And part of what you carried with you, Dean, was some struggles in youth. You had a challenging relationship with your dad. You dealt with bullying. Did any of that help to inform your portrayal at all?
I think it just, I think those things early on shape you, and I think these are things that you learn to cope with. You know, where the bullying is concerned, you know, once you come to terms with the thing you're being bullied or teased about, in my case, it was my blushing face, it was my red face, and that seems like such a minor thing. And really, the reality is, in the context of a life, being a blusher is really a minor thing. When you're 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, doing things that make you stand out in a way that brings teasing or derision or criticism is not where any of us want to be. And I think it wasn't really until I learned through some very special experiences I had to accept who I was, or I was able to find, actually, the better way to put it is I found some acceptance in other areas of my life, which made my painful embarrassment over my red face less important. And so I was finally able to laugh at that stuff. And, you know, that's really, I was in on the joke. I got the joke. I understood why I was being teased. Now, and I still blush. I mean, you know, I still do. At 68 years old, I still blush. And now it's just like, it's just part of me. And if someone calls me out on it, said, yeah, you know, what shade am I now? I mean, it's like, it's just what it is. And I have no control over it. And I don't want to control it, you know, it's part of me. And I try and leave that alone now. The relationship with my father was just sort of and I had a similar experience with Michael Landon early on working with him, where I got shut down in a very innocent moment of enthusiasm. And it just, when a kid has those kinds of experiences, it makes you cautious to step into that again.
Sure.
So with those people, you become very careful. And I was careful with my father from that point forward. And after an experience I had with Michael Landon in my first hour on the Little House set, I was very careful with him too. And I wish I hadn't had those experiences, but I had them, and they had an impact on me.
People often talk about chemistry on film, on stage, and there's something to that, but a lot of that is also the product of hard work. I went back and rewatched the scene with the first kiss with Almanzo and my guy and Laura, and what a beautiful, sensitive scene that is played up so honestly. It was just terrific the way you did that, and you know, there was an age difference there. It was gone when you watched that scene.
I think, you know, I appreciate that, Rich. That's very nice. I think as I went into that and thinking back all those years ago, I didn't want, it was very important that the audience never feel that Laura was overmatched by Almanzo, that he was somehow taking advantage of her in any way. I mean, the audience could never feel that and be okay. I felt like, as I've looked at that scene and I sort of shake my head when I first saw it, I said, oh my God, I'm really a nerd here. And, but in retrospect, looking at it, it just has a kind of a sweetness. And I felt like as I look at it now, I felt like I was playing it younger than she was. Or at the very least, we were the same. In that moment, we were the same age, in the same situation, and Almanzo was a young man filled with wonder at the surprise of finding someone he thought of as a nice young friend as someone that meant a lot more to him. And I think that's where that sort of that wonder came from. And, you know, now I look at it, and I'm pleased with what we did, because it is, I think it's just touched a lot of people who have viewed it. It's viewed as a very romantic moment and a sweet moment and an aspirational moment for people. And that's great to be a part of that. I love being a part of that.
We're talking with Dean Butler here on Downtown. I want to move on from Little House and talk about some of your other terrific work through the years. I don't know that any show could be more different from Little House than what you did working on Buffy the Vampire Slayer as Hank Summers.
Yeah, you know, that was, I mean, Buffy was such a dark comedy thing, so wickedly smart. The cool thing about that is that, like, you know, like Laura Ingalls, like Gidget, I'd been Moondoggy on a half-hour sitcom called The New Gidget. So went from Manly to Moondoggy, and then to, then in series went to Hank Summers. One of the cool things in my journey as an actor that I have loved is being able to play, to be connected to iconic young women, and who are special women. Well, Laura Ingalls Wilder was a very special woman, and is represented beautifully on the pages of her books as well as in the television series. Gidget was, you know, way out in front of her time in the 1950s when these books were first written. That, you know, a young woman who really wanted to fit in with the guys and be one of the gang, and yet, you know, as cute and fun and you know as she could possibly be, but didn't want to be in any way diminished because she was a young woman. She wanted to be one of the gang. And then with Buffy, this reluctant hero, someone who, you know, you look at Sarah Michelle Gellar, who's like a wisp of a woman. You feel like a breeze would blow her away. And yet here she is, you know, here she, in the mythology of this, she is the chosen one to, you know, fight the forces that rise up to the surface of the earth through the hell mouth that's right over the top of her high school library. I mean, what a trippy setup that is. And she was wonderful. I mean, Sarah Michelle Gellar is a wonderful, wonderful actress. And look, I didn't do a lot of that show, but I really appreciated being a part of something that was so smart and a really interesting forward-thinking look at a young woman in a contemporary setting. I thought that was, I loved that. And one of the other cool things, Rich, that came out of for me is I got a Buffy trading card.
Oh, you know,
Hank Summers had a Buffy trading card, and I thought that was a pretty cool thing.
You also did some stage work. I'm a high school theater director, so I was so excited to learn that you had done a West Side Story company. You were in the Broadway production of Into the Woods and got to do one of my favorite songs from the show, Agony.
Yeah. No, you know, I got to do 320 performances of Into the Woods. The vast majority of them playing the younger brother to the younger brother of Cinderella's prince, who was played so brilliantly by Robert Westenberg. To be on a stage with him every night, you know, was just an incredibly special experience. Being on that, so, you know, someone who is you, Rich, directing young actors, I mean, to... You can appreciate what those dreams are like when people are aspiring to do that. I never allowed myself to dream of the possibility of working on Broadway. That seemed to me well beyond what I would have ever be able to do. And as it turns out, in many ways, I think I was probably better suited to working on the stage than I was to working in front of the camera. I think I'm grateful that I have this sense that I can connect to an audience, and I think, and I believe, and you share this, I'm sure, with your young actors, you know, the audience wants you to succeed. Audiences want actors to be successful when they're in front of them, and no one wants to see an actor struggle on the stage. It's a horribly uncomfortable experience. So we're rooting for everybody to be great, and for young kids, I mean, then you connect with the whole artistic, the power of the art touch and shape people's lives. I think we de-emphasize that in our culture today, but whatever it is, I mean, if it's acting on a stage or if it's painting or sculpture or whatever the art, if it's writing, poetry, whatever the artistic expression is, it has value. It reaches into or it touches someplace deep inside of you and allows you to express something that's really honest and truthful about yourself. And you get to know yourself through the arts. And I hope we can look, there are a lot of communities that continue to believe in the arts, but it's expensive. But you're making human beings, you're making fully formed human beings as when they get to express themselves artistically, and it's so important.
You have had such great success behind the camera for several years, working on the sports broadcast and producing Faraday for the Golf Channel. I love David Faraday. I wish I could do that accent. He's amazing. What's that whole experience been like for you?
Well, David is just brilliant, and he has, I think the great gift of Faraday is that he has a total vulnerability and honesty about his humanity. You know, he has been willing to share all the things that a lot of people hide and don't want anyone to know about. Well, David reached the point where he simply couldn't hide it anymore. I think he tried to hide it or didn't want to acknowledge that he had a problem with alcohol and other things. And once he finally got a grip on that, I think he really became an evangelist to help people accept that they have an issue, that they have a problem, and that they can do something about it. And David loved to talk about, and talked often when we're working together, about, you know, he was just living one day at a time. It was an hour at a time. It was an evening at a time. He was so focused on being honest about where he was, and he brought all of that honesty to the conversations he had with the world's greatest golfers, with politicians, with captains of business, with entertainers, athletes outside of the world of golf. David just had the ability to speak on a very human level to everybody he spoke to, and I think people really appreciated that about him.
Well, and there's kind of a through line, I think, to Little House on the Prairie, in that with Faraday, his humanity and his sincerity always come through.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I remember a wonderful conversation he had with Terry Bradshaw. We went to Terry's ranch in Oklahoma, and Terry said at the end of the interview, "I'm so grateful that you're who I thought you were, and not, you know, some blankety blank bleak thing that, you know, that would be someone I wouldn't like." I mean, they had a wonderful conversation, and they were both wonderfully honest with each other about their stuff. And we just got so much contact from audiences who appreciated that honesty because it gave them permission to be honest about their stuff. And people need that. And David offered that to people, and I loved his writing, and I do love his writing, and I love the way he connects to people. And David is masterful in front of the camera. The camera looks right into his soul, and he communicates so wonderfully with people through the television camera. He's a remarkable talent.
I've talked to so many actors and directors and writers who have said, when you've got stability at home, it allows you to do so much more in your personal and your professional life. You can take chances because you know that you've got that rock behind you. What has Catherine done for you in your professional life?
Well, Catherine, I met Catherine when we were both working, or Catherine was actually just being hired to work for Michael Landon on his Father Murphy series and was the female lead in that. I was obviously involved in Little House. We were out at Big Sky Movie Ranch. I saw her. She saw me. We looked at each other. Now, we were both involved in other situations at that time. So, you know, we weren't, there was no connection that happened then. But I remembered her. Well, there was a connection, but no one acted on a connection. It wasn't until 15 years later that she was out of her first marriage and I was just out of my first marriage. And I ran into her again at a commercial audition and she said hello to me. And, you know, it started us down a path. I think the great thing that Catherine did for me is she believed in me as a creative person beyond just being an actor. And I really struggled with feeling, Rich, that if I turned away from acting, that I would be perceived as a failure. You know, I really struggled with that. And Catherine just minimized all of that anxiety and said, you know, we only have one ride through this life, and we have to follow where opportunities are. And there was no judgment of my desire to move in a different direction. And she appreciated it. I mean, her first husband had been a wonderful commercial director. She'd been a script supervisor, a hand model, an accountant, all these different things in production, in addition to being a wonderful actress herself. And she really, truly is a wonderful actress. She gave me permission to not worry about any perceptions of being somehow less than because I was considering something beyond acting or away from acting. And that was a real gift. And that gift has informed professionally my life from the start of our relationship. And that was, you know, 15 years later. We've been together for 28 years and married for 23 years. And that her support of me has allowed me to try all kinds of things and feel good about it, you know. And so she's been an amazing gift in my life.
Prairie Man, My Little House Life and Beyond, comes out next week. I've pre-ordered mine. I can't wait to read it. You got some personal appearances coming up as well next week at the Simi Valley Book Signing in July at Walton Walnut Grove, Michigan, South Dakota, July 26th to the 28th. And you'll actually be here in New England, Watertown, Connecticut, August 30th to September 1st. Dean, I've enjoyed your work both in front of and behind the camera for many years. Great to talk with you this afternoon.
Rich, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your interest in me and in Prairie Man and sharing me with your audience. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dean. Dean Butler with us here on Downtown. We'll take a break. Be back in just a